So if you'd like to have Matthew 5 open again, we're continuing this short series on what is a Christian. That's the title, or could phrase it more particular, what in the world is a Christian? It's a question that needs to be asked at this point in Matthew's gospel, at this point in the whole of the Bible story. It's a question that's needed because, as I've said often in these introductions, this is a hugely significant moment. To put it in short, the kingdom of heaven has come at this point. The long-awaited life that the world has been waiting for, that we've lost ever since sin entered the world in Genesis 3, this life of joy, peace, eternal life with God, everything the human heart was made for, is now here with Jesus Christ. He says in chapter 4, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. It's near. It's near with me, Jesus says. Heaven is here. But it didn't come as the Jews were expecting. They expected it to come in one sudden hit. The world's finished. Heaven's here. No more death, no more enemies, no more sin. But it didn't. It comes in two stages. So we've got Jesus first coming, and then we've got his second coming, and there's this middle phase, which we live today. And the issue here is, or the apparent tension, is there's two kingdoms together, running alongside each other. The kingdom of this world and the kingdom of heaven. Some are in the kingdom of heaven, some are in the kingdom of this world. Do you see why there's a need for this question? What is a Christian? Essentially, who is in this kingdom of heaven? How do you know? More than that, why is it worth it? If there's two choices I have every day to live for, there's not one choice, there's two. I can either live for this world, or I can live for the kingdom of heaven that has broken in. Why is it worth it? That's the kind of questions that Jesus is answering, particularly here in this opening section of his sermon. He's speaking to the disciples. He's saying, you're in this kingdom. This is what it looks like. This is why you should live for this and this alone. And he's speaking to the wider crowd. There's huge crowds listening in, saying, come in. He's addressing two, but particularly he's teaching his disciples. Now, have you noticed as we've gone through each characteristic that Jesus has said about the Christian? Poor in spirit, verse 3. Mourn, verse 4. Meek, verse 5. Hunger and thirst for righteousness, verse 6. It's all saying to us, a Christian is showing heaven. It's not like this world. They're not like this world. They are showing evidence that they've entered this kingdom. That's the point. And Jesus is saying, blessed are you because you are showing that evidence that you are in the kingdom now. And more than that, look forward. He keeps saying, they shall be comforted. They shall inherit. He's getting us to look forward, saying, hold on. I know it's hard, Christian. I know it's hard living in this middle phase where the world's pulling you in. Hold on. It's worth it. That's the kind of thing that's going on here. But we reach now verse 7. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. So we learn a new thing about the Christian. They're merciful. Merciful. So we've got some questions to ask. Four main questions. The first one is, what does it mean to be merciful? The obvious question we have to begin with. What does it mean to be merciful? Well, let's try and define it. It's someone who is moved with pity and compassion for someone else who's in need and misery. That's someone who's merciful. It begins in their heart. They feel compassion. It's deep. But it results in action. It doesn't stay in the heart. They do something about it, and they relieve the situation. So a nice illustration of this is the Good Samaritan. We know the story. Many people walked past. They might have felt sorry for him. There's one person who actually did something, the Good Samaritan. Cleaned up the wounds, got him back on his feet. So that's merciful. But the key thing I want us to know is it's undeserved. The person in need didn't do anything to deserve the kindness from the person who was merciful. In fact, the person in need may have been an enemy. of the person who's merciful. They may have wronged the person who is being merciful. It's not deserved. It's not earned. So that's really important. And how we need this. Let's pause for a minute. We live in a world of great need and misery. There's physical need. There are people who are hungry today. There are people who have diseases, countless issues physically, let alone mentally. We have emotional trauma we're dealing with, baggage. There's mental health issues. Then there's spiritual. So it's threefold. We are lost. We don't know where we're going when we die as a nation. We don't know God. There's great need. So we need merciful people. I haven't done anything to deserve kindness. If you analyze the decisions that I made in my life, I haven't earned kindness from anyone, but I need mercy. We need mercy. And Jesus says there's merciful people, the Christian. That's what he's saying. But there might be an objection at this point. Wait a minute. There's loads of kind people in our world today. There are so many acts of kindness going on in this world. The charities, the people dedicating their lives to helping others. So how is the Christian different? How does this only apply to the Christian? For that, I just want to say that the mercy that a Christian is showing is a mercy from another world. They're in the kingdom of heaven now. They are portraying heavenly things. What you see in the Christian is the mercy of God. So let's try and picture this mercy of God and see how it's different. First of all, let's say the obvious thing. God is merciful. Why did I read that account from Exodus earlier as we opened our service? Did you notice the first thing that God said about himself when Moses said, "Show me your glory"? God says his name, the Lord, the first word, merciful. It's the first thing he says. So it's important. God is merciful. How we need that in our world today, to know that truth, that we as a sinful world who have rebelled against God, who are dying because of our rebellion, that God is merciful. We have to know that. That's why maybe it's the first thing he says to Moses. It's the first thing we need to know. He's merciful. But what I want to say tonight is God's mercy, God's kindness, is different to any sort of mercy or compassion that you have tasted in this world. It is completely in another league to any sort of kindness you've experienced from human beings. And let me try and explain why. And to show you, we just have to look at the man preaching this sermon, Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the Son of God. He reveals God to us. We see God in the face of Jesus Christ. So when we look at him, we see the mercy of God. So let me just give you a few snapshots. Firstly, look at the concern of Jesus. He's concerned. When he comes to earth, already in this sermon, he sees the crowd. What's his first thing? I'm going to preach. They need to hear the truth. Then you get to Matthew 9. He looks out at the crowds. Now, what do you think when you look out at crowds, when you walk through a busy high street? What's the first thought? Oh, busy. These people, they're in my way. They're in the queues. They're slowing me down. What's Jesus' first response to the crowds? When he saw the crowds, he had compassion. He saw them as harassed, helpless sheep without a shepherd. That's the kind of mercy Jesus has. And notice, it's the crowd. There's not a single person singled out. He looks upon the crowds. What mercy, how wide it is. But also note, he's concerned about the whole you. Why am I emphasizing that? Because there's charities today who do great work. Do you know, when I see charities on the high street, I don't know if people commend me for this, I stop and chat to them when they've got their clipboard, and I say, I don't know if they probably don't enjoy this, but I say, it's a really good work that you're doing. Really good. I genuinely mean it. It's a really good work, but I want to give my money to someone who is not just concerned about the body or the mind, but the soul. I'm a Christian, and I've realized that I have a soul, and every human being has a soul. Why is that important? Because The world is not concerned. The world is concerned about body and mind, which is important, but it largely ignores the soul. Jesus attended to every part. He fed the hungry. He healed the sick. He comforted those who were in emotional trauma, but he preached to the souls. He came to preach and warn people of the judgment to come and bring people into a salvation of their soul. Jesus is concerned about the whole you. His mercy is unique. More, look at his heart. He weeps when he walks this earth. He sees a funeral. He weeps. In Matthew 23, he says, "How often would I have called you to the very people that are going to kill him, but you would not come. I would have called you in now." He feels for us. He has deep heart affection for us. Look at his action. We said that mercy must lead to action. What's his action? Well, he leaves his throne in heaven, becomes a man, taking on our human weakness. He lives in this miserable world and does good. Imagine the patience he had to have with his disciples, let alone the Pharisees. And that's not even 1%. He goes eventually to a cross. That's the action he took to relieve the misery of this world. It took a cross, and it took him facing no mercy, utterly none. Not one drop of mercy was given to him at the cross. The Father, he cries out, "My God, why have you forsaken me?" Not one look even of mercy. Utterly forsaken. Disciples fled to take our misery upon himself. The sin, the guilt, the shame, everything, death itself, that we might receive mercy. That's the action it took for Christ to relieve us of our great need. But more than that, look what he accomplished. He didn't just heal physically. It would be great if my foot was healed, my leg was healed. So Christ stopped at nothing less than the whole me and the whole you being relieved completely, body, mind, soul, forever. He would stop at nothing less than that. That is the mercy of Christ. That's how far he will go. That's how wide his mercy is. And then one more thing, one more snapshot. Look at who receives his mercy. Us. We are created through him, for him, and he has given us every single thing that good that you have received in your life. The breath in your lungs right now is from him. The very reason your heart is beating is because of him. And what have we done? We haven't thanked him. That's bad enough. I don't know if you've been driving and you stop to let someone pass and they don't thank you. You're waiting for the thank you. They don't. You are fuming. How dare they? I stopped for 5 seconds of my life and they didn't even thank me. Imagine that times a million. Everything God has done for us and the world does not thank him. That's bad enough. But to then see what we did to him as he came to earth, spitting in his face, mocking him, putting him to death. It is us, the ones that he has this compassion for. Have you ever seen mercy like this? There is no mercy like his. And when you look out at this world, it is a nothing compared to that. Everything is cold. Everything is greedy. Everything is artificial. Why am I saying artificial? Because even the great deeds that we do as a human race, what does Jesus say in verse 2 of chapter 6? "Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward." Why does he need to say that? Because we are the type of people, human beings, that will go and feed a homeless person while filming it on Instagram to the world. "Look, I'm giving this. Do you see? That's us. That's us. Even when we do good, it's filthy. Even our righteous deeds are filthy in the sight of God." Now, I'm not discounting the good done in this world. Please don't mistake that. But what I'm trying to highlight is God's mercy is in another plane. There's nothing like it. This is the mercy our needy world needs. And Jesus says something astounding. Blessed are the merciful. He's saying a Christian is, they show something of this kind of mercy. Something. It might be a glimpse, but it's something. Don't believe me? Look at Stephen. Stoned in Acts. What does he say? He almost carbon copies what Christ said. Do not hold this sin against them as they are killing him. A Christian. Paul. This is the one I love. Paul. He's converted from Judaism. He becomes a believer. The Jews are now out to kill him. And in read Acts, there's just endless episodes of the Jews trying to kill Paul. What does he write in Romans 10? Let's turn to it very briefly, and you'll capture something of this mercy of God that shows in Christians. Listen to this. He's speaking about his Jewish brethren. Brothers, my heart's desire and prayer to God for them, those very people that are trying to kill me, is that they may be saved. Let's go back a chapter, chapter 9. He wants them saved. How far is he feeling it? Chapter 9 of Romans. Sorry if you're turning. I'm moving quick. I am speaking the truth in Christ. I am not lying. My conscience bears me witness in the Holy Spirit that I have great sorrow and unceasing anguish in my heart. For I could wish that I myself were accursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my brothers. Do you see what he's saying there? He's so moved in his heart for them. Even though they're trying to kill him, he wishes that he himself could be cut off from the salvation he's found so that they can come in. That is something of the mercy of God in believers, in Christians. Now, we could stand back and admire that. But we must know that kind of living is so hard. Christians, are you tired of trying to live merciful? It is so hard. The very people who are trying to step on you, the very people who care nothing for you, you're supposed to put them first before yourself? Maybe some of us are thinking, is this life worth it, this merciful life? This is why I want to speak about the second question. How are the merciful blessed? Because that's Jesus' point here. He's saying, blessed are the merciful. If that's you, blessed are you. Why? What reason does he give? They shall receive mercy. What's he doing? They shall. He's pointing us to the final day, future, where he returns and the kingdom comes fully. What's going to happen on that day? It's the day where mercy is most needed, where you'll feel it the most. If you need one thing on that day, it's mercy. Just imagine Jesus coming in the clouds, every eye seeing him, people wishing rocks to fall on them to hide from his sight, but there's nowhere to hide. It's up. Time is up. The door of mercy is closed. What will he say? Depart from me. I never knew you. You cursed. No mercy. Passed into an eternal future with no mercy forever. No comfort. And on that day, they shall receive mercy. Isn't that our greatest need? Imagine on that day the fearful terror, yet for some, Christ will wipe the tears from their eyes. Doesn't this bring things to the fore for us? This is our greatest need. I need mercy on that day. Whatever happens now for the next 60 years, 50 years, I don't know how long you guys have got, the one thing I need is mercy. It's the one thing on that day. And he says, oh, the merciful receive mercy. So the next question we have to ask is, if it comes down to merciful, if that's the key thing he highlights here about the Christian, the obvious next question is, am I merciful? Are you? So much depends on this. You could rephrase that question as, in me asking you, are you merciful? Am I merciful? We could rephrase it, are you a Christian? But it's better to ask, am I merciful? Why? Because if I was to ask you here, are you a Christian? Most of you would say, yeah, yep, yeah, I'm a Christian. But what about, are you merciful? Because this is a question not about what your lips say, but what your life says. Jesus says, by their fruits you will know them, not by their words. Fruit matters. What does your life show? Why is this important point? Because the Pharisees at this time would be the first to say, we are people of God. But their lives showed no mercy whatsoever. Read the accounts of the Gospels. You picture these Pharisees as utter, hard, harsh, looking down on everyone else, not one ounce of mercy. It's important to ask the question, am I merciful? Because it's supposed to be a mark of a Christian. So but also when we ask that question, we're doing it by God's mercy, not by the mercy I see in this world. So let's just ask some quick questions. Do you have the sort of mercy that Jesus showed? Now, I'm not asking you to be perfect. We're not asking for this perfect life of mercy, but a glimmer, a glimpse of the love of Christ in my life. Do you share his concern for all people? When you look out at crowds, even that person that wronged you, that person that you are struggling to forgive, that person that spoke behind your back, that person who in your eyes is not worthy of anything from God, them? Do you have any concern for them? What about the whole of them? Are you concerned about not just people's health and well-being, but their soul? Do you know that's one of the marks of a Christian? When I was in the early days of becoming a Christian, I went to see Gerard because I was concerned about my family members going to hell. I've never felt it before. And Gerard said to me, that's a good sign that you've become a Christian. You're concerned suddenly about the souls of the lost. Do you share that? At least a concern? Do you share his heart? When was the last time you wept at the miserable state of another person? Maybe you're not a crier, but when was the last time you felt it deep within? Like Paul, like I read with Paul, this unceasing anguish for someone else. I had the pleasure of being, I'm sure Mike Meller won't mind me saying this, but I had the pleasure of being with him on Heath Camp, and I witnessed him talk about this very subject. We need a heart for others. And as he was talking about this war-torn situation that he had witnessed on Twitter, he broke down in tears uncontrollably in front of everyone. He was so moved. And I thought, when was the last time I was moved about anything? His action, not just his heart, his action. Do we do anything for the sake of others? Their souls. Do I pray at least? I might have the boldness to speak, but do I pray for souls? Not just my family, but the people I rub shoulders with. What I'm trying to do here is just build up a picture of something of God's mercy and ask, does your life show any of it? Now, this isn't to make us feel bad. I'll be honest, as I prepared this, I felt utterly falling short. My mercy for others is I don't know what to say, not good. That's all I saw as I went through this verse. Where's my mercy? So it's just something to get us thinking. This is the test. If you're not a Christian here, this sort of mercy will be utterly alien to you. It's not the mercy you find in this world. But I would like to say also, if we're Christians here, we would have tasted something of this, but no doubt it's faint. So the next question I want to ask is, how did the Christian become merciful? This is so important because there's something going on in this verse deeper than the first surface reading. As you read this, there's a real danger that you might think, right, Jesus is telling us to be more merciful. If I want mercy on that final day, I've got to be merciful now. So I've just got to try harder. I've got to help old ladies across the road and just do my good and hopefully God will show me mercy on that day. That sounds a bit like Islam. That sounds a bit like any other religion. That's not what's going on here. We want to read it like that because we have this default in us of religion That's not what's going on here. Let me give you some clues to show you that that's not happening in this verse. First clue, what does it say? They shall receive mercy. We have defined mercy as undeserved kindness and compassion. So that mercy on that final day cannot be down to how I lived now. So that's the first thing. Second clue is the phrasing Jesus uses. Blessed are the merciful. Not blessed are those who try to be merciful. You are already Christian. Something's happened to you. You are that already by being a Christian. That's the second thing. The third clue is that word merciful. It's a heart change we're talking about. Deep affection. You can't change that. You can do all the good deeds out there that you want. You can't change in there. So the change that has gone on in the Christian is something dramatic. But there's a fourth clue. It's where this verse is placed in the list. We have a list of statements by Jesus. Where is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 down. Do you know these statements are not laid out randomly? I think we've said this in previous sermons. They're logical. They move from one to the other. It's saying the Christian has been on this journey and mercy is down here. It's not at the beginning. Why is that important? Because it's what's the Christian's journey? They started here. Just like the rest. Hard, proud, not an ounce of mercy. Even when they did good, yeah, they did some good things, but inside, it was really all about them. They were proud, hard, lifted up, secretly looking down on everyone else, by the way. But something happened, verse 3. God broke in. They became poor in spirit. They started to see themselves in God's light. Oh, I thought I was good. I thought I did all these good deeds. But now I see my heart is empty. I'm poor. There's not one ounce of good in me. Even the good deeds I've done are like filthy rags. I'm actually filled with sin, poor in spirit. But then, so they've got an empty heart. But verse 4, they mourn. Their heart starts to break. This hard heart is breaking. Their pride is smashed. They feel terrible. How could I live like that before this loving God? Verse 5, they're meek. Their heart is lowered. They used to live up there, looking down at everyone. Now this heart is empty, broken, and it's lowering. Other people are up there. They're down here. It's not about them. No self-justification. I'm the worst. Meek, humble. Verse 6, it led them to hunger and look for God to fill them with righteousness, which he did. They're satisfied, Jesus says, verse 6. Then we get to verse 7. What does it tell us? Merciful. It was all of mercy. Everything that happened was all mercy. They did nothing but come and cry. And yet they were filled. We discover something. They were filled with mercy. Their hearts melted in the love of God. And now they're changed. It overflows to others. I can't help but love others now. He loved me so much. I need to love others. How could I not? They don't deserve it, but I didn't. Do you see? They were changed by the mercy of God. In fact, completely changed. Born again. They look like Jesus now. They've got a new heart. That old hard one is broken. Do you see why Jesus says, blessed are the merciful? When you're seeing someone merciful, showing something of God's mercy, it is saying, I have met with God. He has changed me. He's melted me. I'm never the same again. It's like COVID. Why am I? You might think, where's COVID coming from? Think about when someone has COVID. What does it tell you about them? They came into contact with someone who had COVID. When you see someone merciful, it tells you that they came into contact with the God who is merciful. It's contagious. Or imagine it like a cup. I'm coming with my empty cup. God, I need mercy. I've done nothing to deserve this. I've got nothing. It's empty. And he pours mercy in, but he pours it in so it overflows. What am I trying to say? It's harder for a Christian not to be merciful. You have to do that with the cup. I want it. I want it for me. It's much easier to receive God's mercy and it overflows. I hope I'm making the point here. The headline over the Christian in verse 7 is from beginning to end, that final day, mercy is the headline over their life. Hence, they are merciful because they're full of mercy now. I hope that makes sense. Let's close with our final application. Back to that original question, are you merciful? That is the key question tonight because that will show whether you have received God's mercy. If your answer tonight is no, I know nothing of this sort of mercy, I don't feel that way towards others, or yes, but it's faint, I'm growing hard, I'm losing that love for others, then this isn't a try harder message. If you're not merciful, it's telling you something. Firstly, see it like a mirror. If I'm harsh and hard with others, it's telling something about how I relate to God. It's actually saying that I believe God is hard and harsh with me. It's a mirror. Secondly, it's a warning light. So I don't know if you drive, whoever drives here, warning lights come up on your car. I can safely say that ever since I've owned my car, there has been a warning light, some sort of warning light on constantly. I'm not proud of that. I try and get the mechanics to fix it. It's still there. It's still there. Maybe that's you. Maybe you've had this warning light all for a long time now saying, you're not merciful. There's no mercy in you. What's it telling you? It's saying you need mercy. You need God's mercy. Why is this so important? Why do you need to see this? Because God's mercy waits for you. Imagine the cross. See Jesus' arms wide and his body broken. And picture mercy continuously flowing out, even from him now in heaven. Mercy, abundant mercy, is waiting for you. But we must see it. And if you're starting to see tonight, I lack this kind of mercy in my life, then good. Because how can mercy enter a hard-filled heart? There's no room for mercy. It can't get in. But the minute your heart starts to empty of pride, there's room. The minute your heart starts to break because of your sin, there's ways for mercy to get in now. The heart's breaking. The minute your heart lowers in humility, meekness, mercy can travel in. Because as we've seen with Gerard's sermon, it travels downstream. So the humble, broken, empty heart, if that's you, you're in the right place tonight to receive God's mercy. It's the very thing Jesus has been mapping out in the Beatitudes. Basically, I could summarize the Beatitudes up until verse 7 as how to find mercy. He's mapped it out for you. Poor in spirit, mourn, meek, hunger, then merciful. So what am I telling you to do tonight? Come to Jesus with your empty heart, empty of all your pride and good deeds and everything you think you bring to the table. Empty it. Break, let your heart break over your sins. Lower yourself and say to God, say to Christ, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And mercy will have contact with you. Even Christians tonight, you need a fresh outpour of mercy. He will give it because his cross secured it. Doesn't matter what you've done, how long it's been, there is more mercy for you. And this is the place of blessing, Christian. Paul, when I read Apostle Paul, I get the sense he never got over this. He never got over that he is the chief of sinners and Christ had mercy on him. Some of the statements he says, the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me, the chief of sinners, wretched man that I am, he never lost sight of it. Maybe that's why he was so used of God. Mike Meller, how I hear his testimony and the way he says it, you get the sense he never got over what God did. He never forgot where he was. Basil Howlett, I can name people. This is where we need to be, a place to receive fresh mercy from God. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. So let's sing our final hymn, which I can't think of a more fitting hymn. His mercy is more. Whatever it is, that reason that you give, why there's no mercy for you, his mercy is more.